The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello again, everybody. It's time for another edition of Kiefer and Curry. Kip Kiefer and Tony Curry, excited to be with you for another edition. And Tony, we've had the format of folks who are tuning to the show for the first time of you and I going back and forth every other week. One week it is the subject that you come up with and I prepare for and we discuss it. And then the next week, just the opposite. It's my gig. And this time I was still undecided about which direction I wanted to go until about 2:30 in the afternoon on Saturday, as I watched my brand new theater screen and watched the Masters horn go off and call a halt to play, and I saw an image that still just glued in my mind. It was of Tiger Woods struggling, literally struggling to get off of the golf course in the pouring rain, soaked to the bone, barely able to walk. And it was such a correlation to me of the whole story of this guy. And I said, that's it. Tony and I need to talk about Eldrick Tiger Woods on this week's show.
Yeah, maybe what you didn't see there, obviously, we think about his back, his leg. I mean, what are we not talking about? In this particular case, it was his plantar fasciitis. And you also saw one of the pieces that I think we love about Tiger Woods, and this is really from a psychological standpoint, just an excellent topic and a great show, and kudos to you for the pick. But as he walked off that golf course on Saturday, there was a little 8-year-old girl standing on the side of the Masters. She had a bucket list to go see a Masters. She loves golf. This little girl has had 3 open heart surgeries. She wasn't supposed to live past the age of 3, and she had a little sign that said, I love Tiger Woods. His caddy walks up to Tiger and says, listen, a little girl over here, it's got a sign. He takes his glove off, Tiger does, signs Tiger Woods on it, and gives it to her as a gift. And again, that's one of those things that a lot of people didn't see, didn't hear about, but one of the things that we love about Tiger Woods. And, you know, this is, we talked about this yesterday before you didn't need to know. Normally, when we see rich and famous people fall, it makes us feel better about ourselves. First of all, it humanizes them. We go, aha, life isn't so good just because you're a multimillionaire and the GOAT and the best in your field or your platform. But for some reason, for Tiger Woods, it feels different. And I even reached out to Dr. Josh Klapo, and I'll read a quote from him a little bit later on the show about what are we rooting for the man? Are we rooting for the player? Are we rooting for both? It's just an amazing story and just how famous he is.
I think, Tony, it emanates from the fact that the way he started out was so different than what he is now. Just to give a little historical reference, Tiger Woods was born on December 30th, 1975. Mm-hmm. And he first came into public view, didn't wait long. He appeared in 1978 as a 2-year-old on the Mike Douglas show, alongside the other guest, Bob Hope, which is a guy you might have heard of. Mm-hmm. And in that program, 2-year-old Tiger Woods and Bob Hope had a putting contest. They set up a putting green right on the set of the show. And it's famous stuff. If you haven't seen it, go back and look on YouTube. But you talk about a quick debut. Tiger Woods, Bob Hope missed his putt. And when it was Tiger Woods' turn, he picked up his ball, ran up the little putting green, laid it an inch from the cup, and tapped it in to win the match. It was absolutely hilarious. Bob Hope said, I got hoodwinked by a guy in diapers or some comment like that. And Tiger Woods announced himself to the world. And, you know, you talk about a guy who lived up to the hype. I mean, when you establish yourself as a 2-year-old and you deliver as he did, but I think the way that he did that in such a robotic fashion, he was almost, if you recall that era when he stormed on the scene in the 1997 Masters, and he had been dominant in amateur events before that. But Tony, he won the 97 Masters, which I was fortunate enough to actually attend and witness that final round. He won that by 12 shots over Tom Kite as a 21-year-old. You know, think about that. I mean, you talk about just being an absolute overnight sensation, but he was so robotic and so driven and so not personable at that time, because that's how he had been basically trained to be, that when he did have the fall and became so highly humanized, I think maybe it had kind of a reverse effect. And then people that finally saw this was a real person with real flaws and real problems. And he's been embraced since then, which, as you mentioned, is highly societally unlikely.
No, and you know, it's, you bring up a great point, because at the age of two in the Mike Douglas show, and of course he was also on the Johnny Carson show a little bit later on, I say a little later on in his life, I think he was five. But maybe that's one of the reasons we love him so much, is because he's only 47, but we've seen him for 44 years.
Yeah.
Kip, he shot a 48 on his dad's Navy course. It was a par 72, 7,000 yards at the age of three. I can't break 50 now. He did it at the age of 3 years old on a full course. I mean, it was crazy.
And this guy, remember the images, and that's why, again, the images of Saturday, of seeing and knowing what his journey has entailed and the adversities, a lot of them inflicted, to see the correlation between the guy I saw striding down number one fairway that morning in 1997 at the Masters on his way to the great triumph that Jim Nantz forever framed, a win for the ages, as he putted out on 18, to see the correlation between the absolutely sculpted, ripped athlete who changed golf forever, because suddenly golf wasn't a fat white guy's sport at the country club. It was the chiseled athlete, and a whole generation of kids started playing golf because suddenly the game was cool and it was every bit as alluring to them as basketball or football or baseball. And Tiger Woods is responsible for that. And as I watched him limp off, I had the thought, Tony, that every guy on that course should be up and thanking with all of their might Tiger Woods, because the reason they're playing for multi-million dollar purses and golf is enjoying the popularity it is because Eldrick Tiger Woods has made that sport into what it is today.
In 1995, a year before Tiger became a pro in 1996, Greg Norman was your top tour money winner with $1.6 million. Within 9 years, that money was tenfold. Tiger Woods took him over $11 million just 10 years later. That's how he changed the money. And to your point, I don't think we have LIV Golf without Tiger Woods, despite the fact that he turned the $800 million down to go play for LIV Golf, which a lot of fans absolutely love the fact that he did. I don't think we have that. And I'm not sure, I know because of inflation and everything else going on in sports, and certainly you're seeing Major League Baseball players now, utility guys are making $14 million a year. I don't think the money, he did. He brought it to the normal fan. He made the normal fan feel like, hey, listen, I can go out there and buy some golf clubs and play golf. Just to your point, and I know we've heard these numbers, but I found some interesting things. Obviously, 15 majors to Jack's 18. 82 PGA Tour wins. Of course, he is tied with Sam Snead. It'd be great to see him surpass him. He needs one more, obviously, in his life. Don't know if that's going to happen, but of course, we used to throw out the question, what's more likely to happen, Tiger Woods winning another major or blah, 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 and he proved us wrong there. Ranked number one for 683 weeks in a row. Number one in the world at the age of 21. You know, he was a Masters winner at the age of 21. He won six consecutive PGA Tour events in a row. One of only two guys to ever do that. PGA Tour of the Year winner, and of course, Player of the Year 11 times. And again, turned down the $800 million to go get that live payday. And of course, we can get into some transgressions and everything else. I wanted to share this with you because, and I love getting your thoughts on this. Dr. Josh Klepo, who's one of my radio partners and does shows with us here, as we also do the Kiefer and Curry show every single day. You can hear it to podcast it, and of course, I hear it at least five times a week on TKR. I reached out to him this morning, and I said, I'm doing a show with Kip Kiefer this morning about Tiger Woods. Why am I still rooting for him? Why do I still love him? Because normally as a fan, again, when someone falls on hard times and they're millionaires, we're like, ah, life is a little tough, isn't it? Yeah, how do you feel now, big boy? But he still brings my eyeballs to the television. As long as he's got a golf club in his hand, I will check him out. And I said, why are we still fans? He said, I'm not. And I said, why? And he says, and I'm quoting here, we all have to reach this point where our impact just isn't what it used to be in the world. As soon as we go there, we're now truly facing our own mortality. For Tiger, he was the superhero. He was then the fallen hero. Then he was the fallen hero who came back. And now he's a reminder to all of us that even the greatest have a point where there is more of what we did than what we're going to do. Jimmy Carter is an extreme example only because of his age. But in sports, we don't want legacies. We want impact. In life, we don't want legacies. We want our impact. Someday, however, we'll all face the point where we have to have or accept our own life with our legacies because our days are impacted, are fewer than our days of legacy. What's your thoughts on that? Because I know as long as Tiger Woods is on a golf course, he's got a chance to win. The fact that he even made the cut this past weekend was amazing to me.
Yeah, and that's incredible perspective from Josh. I was listening, really hanging on every word of that quote, because it really is something that's very profound for all of us. How much do we personally, and maybe this is why we identify to some degree, how much do we rely on our ghosts of glory, for better lack of a better term, of what we once accomplished? And maybe we hang on to that with all of our might because intellectually, somewhere deep in the recesses of our mind, we fear that we're never going to be that significant again. And I wonder the fact that, and I'll tell you a quick story from something I heard on the coverage on ESPN on Friday morning. Marty Smith, who I'm sure you're familiar with, an ESPN mm-hmm. kind of behind the scenes, real Southern through and through, does a lot of great college football features, but they turned him loose for a couple of days running around the course, and he was getting into places that you don't ever see. And I thought it was really interesting that the gigantic scoreboard that's between the 10th tee and the 18th green, it's a massive, giant, white, old-timey scoreboard, not one component electronic on it. It is the list of the top 20 golfers in the current standings, and it's 18 slots of places for numbers behind each name. And they interviewed Marty Smith, actually climbed the ladder and got up behind the scoreboard and watched how they operate. They have a laptop that sends them the information to put on the board, and they actually pull a number out. And they don't post the score of the hole every time. They just keep putting the red or black number for over or under par mm-hmm. at the hole that's just been completed. So in other words, if you're 10 under and you par the 15th hole, another 10 goes up on that slot. And so many people, Tony, hang out right there by 18 and watch that scoreboard. But the point of the story was, one of the scoreboard guys had inherited that job from his dad back in the early 1950s. So, or I'm sorry, 1960s. He's been doing this for more than 50 years. Wow. At the scoreboard. And Marty Smith asked him, this is the best vantage point imaginable. You're right over the 18th green. The things you had to have seen, what is the most impactful? What is the greatest memory that you can ever recall? And he said, it's amazing. It was just a couple of years ago when Tiger came back against all odds and won the Masters. He says, I have never seen the adulation and the joy and the absolute decibel busting ear level of reaction when he actually hold the last putt and had achieved the impossible and come back and won another green jacket against all odds. And to hear him say that to me was very impactful, because think of the moments. Think of the Nicklauses and the Palmers, the things this guy has witnessed. And he identified that as the most significant moment that he's ever witnessed on 18 in a place that's the bastion of, you know, Southern culture. And, you know, you still hear all the controversy in Georgia about the enacting of the new election laws, which caused baseball to move the All-Star game. It's still kind of painted as this great stronghold of racist attitude. And Tiger Woods, at the symbol of that particular place, it's just amazing to me that he is now more identified with Augusta National than any other place on earth. And it's just a kind of a delicious correlation to me, and really kind of tells the story.
That's a great story. And, you know, you bring up a wonderful point in that fact that Tiger Woods, if he was white, yeah, he'd still be super famous. That guy was called Jack Nicklaus with 18 majors. But the fact that he was black and prototypically he's playing a sport that a lot of African-Americans don't play but brought that game to them makes this story 15 times bigger than it actually is, I think. It's absolutely amazing because he's easier to spot. The fact that he did it for his own generation, I think, is just absolutely amazing. You know, it's something that else is that I think is really interesting, too. And I go back to listen, we talked about the steroid area where there was the green pot and the red pot. You know, people have been cheating for years. It's just a lot easier to catch people now because of the technology we had. Jack Nicklaus, Sam Snead, Gary Player, Chichi Rodriguez, all those guys were all doing things that they weren't supposed to be doing. And I think it's much more difficult now to get away with those types of things like a Tiger had to this point. And you know, to your point as well, I think when you've been through some things in your life that Tiger's been through, and a lot of us have, perhaps we haven't been caught, some of us have been, I'll be one of them, I think it makes him more real and more human and makes me more endeared to not only him, but his legacy. If in fact he was gone tomorrow, what would his legacy be? He was once quoted as saying in one of his many apologies, and let's talk about his infidelity. Of course, we know what happened November 27th with the 9-iron upside the head in 2009, the day after Thanksgiving. We totally forget that he was actually running outside of his house barefoot, got in his Cadillac, and ran into a tree at 30 miles an hour. Got fined $146 for it, but obviously lost his marriage out of it. Sex addict, we're talking about the arrest for DUI in 2017. Finally got it all together, Tiger. What happens 2 years ago? 2 years ago, he's going 82 miles an hour in a 45-mile-an-hour zone and almost loses his life in a car wreck. We thought he'd never come back. But the quote that he said, and I believe this was after the 2017 arrest, and he said, "I thought I could get away with whatever I wanted to. I felt that I had worked hard my entire life and deserved to enjoy all the temptations around me." When I heard that, I finally saw and heard the real Tiger Woods. And my respect for him as a man, as a father, as a player, as a goat of the golf world went to a better level.
Yeah, you know, I think the actual really turning point of Tiger Woods' life was he was so conditioned and so respectful of his dad. He was made by Earl Woods, that process, as you mentioned earlier, started when he was 9 or 10 months old. He goes on Mike Douglas at 2. He shoots, he breaks 50 on a regulation course for 9 holes at 3. I mean, but not just from a golf standpoint, from just a personal conduct standpoint. Earl Woods, former military, just a rigid taskmaster. And when Earl Woods passed away shortly, I think after Tiger's second Masters in the early 2000s, it was almost like the genie got out of the bottle when Earl was laid to rest. And all of that repressed feelings and all those desires that he thought he was entitled to because he had been so subservient and so dedicated to his craft just cut loose, and he just went on an absolute bender of all these various activities. You know, he had gotten married, of course, because I'm sure it was very apparent to him that women were readily available of all shapes, sizes, and backgrounds. He married one of the most beautiful women in the world at the time, the Swedish model Elin, who bore him 2 children pretty much right away. And both of those kids are on a trajectory. His son Charlie is a hell of a golfer now as a teenager. But for him to already have all of that, a lot of people just could not understand the infidelity and how he just went, you know, Tiger goes wild. But, you know, the story about becoming attracted to the manager at a Perkins restaurant in Orlando and having a dalliance with her basically in the back room of the restaurant, you know, it really kind of sets the stage. This is one of the most famous people in the world who is just being reckless in his behavior and leaving a path and really humiliated and embarrassed himself. But I think, Tony, the passing of his dad just cut all of that inner repression loose and really kind of put him on the path to personal destruction, which is just remarkable when you think about he was in within four major titles of Jack Nicklaus. He won his 14th in his mid-30s. He had 15 more prime years of golf at least ahead of him. And as well-conditioned as he is, you know, you at that time, the expectation was it wasn't if he's going to break Jack's record. It's how much and when. And it never happened. He stalled. You know, he came back and got his 15th. But I don't see any scenario, and you hate to ever count him out. But now he's 47 and so physically beaten up with all of his various injuries. And this car accident, one of the policemen on the scene, and he had stormed away from a meeting that went wrong. I don't remember all the details, but that was one of the reasons that he was driving like a maniac and ran off the road. The officer said it's an absolute miracle that he survived that, but it did such terrible damage to his leg. His foot was basically completely restructured. I don't know if that's the same foot that was bothering him here, but it might be a structural thing that'll never be right again. But all of those things to me, again, makes him, instead of the ultimate, you know, revered figure, now he's the ultimate underdog, which is, I don't think you can come up with many examples from human history of somebody who has this kind of vast swing of correlations.
Well, first thing, Perkins has got the best pancakes on the planet. I'm just telling you, IHOP, you can go blow yourself. I'm just telling you, Perkins has got great pancakes. I've eaten at Perkins many times. Second thing is, and I've been around a lot of rock and roll stars, and sometimes when you're an ugly rock and roll star, you get any woman you want. When you're a good-looking rock star, good night. My dad used to always tell me, when you can have any woman you want, you will. And I was like, what? He's like, when you can have any woman you want, you will. Because we always think to ourselves, you know, I think of the Cuba Gooding story, where he's reaching across tables and grab women's breasts. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? You could have any woman. You know what? He can have any woman, and he does. He grabs as much as he possibly can. And it sounds like Tiger Woods. And again, it's one part of this whole story that's just a little bit tempered, a little bit of a blur to me, the whole sex addiction point, because addiction, I know, is a lifelong struggle with anything. It's something you have to practice every single day, and that seemed to go away pretty doggone quick. You, as you always do, brought up a great point, and I don't know any person in my life, including myself, that hasn't been affected by the loss of their father. Tiger, yes. Tiger, I believe, was 31 years of age when his dad passed away in 2006. And you could have a great relationship with the father. Your father could have been 82. He could have been 32. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what your relationship with is your father. Obviously, the better your relationship is, the deeper it gets. And usually the better the feelings are when that father passes away. But for some reason, we could do a whole show on this. When you lose a father, even if you're estranged to that father, it has a direct effect on men. I'm talking men, period. Obviously on their daughters as well. But when a son loses his father, it changes your life. When I lost my dad 6 years ago, I remember thinking to myself, okay, we're in a good place. There was nothing more that I could tell my dad. He was my best friend. He was my best man at my wedding. I knew he had cancer, so I had all this time to share everything in my life with him, and he shared things with me that I thought I'd never hear, and things changed. They just changed the minute they leave this earth. So, you know, I put a lot into effect of that. You know, we've heard so many stories about the Michael Jacksons of the world, the Andre Agassis, these prodigies, these kids that get started at such a young age. And you mentioned the fact that he's sitting there, you know, striking a golf ball at the age of two. And what kind of life is that? Do they have all the things that a normal 2, 3, 12, 13, 21-year-old kid have in their life? Do they get to play with their kids? Are they constantly on the golf course? I'm not so sure about the Tiger Woods situation, but I think, quite frankly, he's handled it incredibly well. The fact that he's had cameras on him his entire life during this technology thing, I think it's just amazing what he's done. And maybe that's why we love him so much.
I think so. I think it's important to point out, too, that we're talking kind of in a golf sense. But societally, I think Tiger Woods has had as much influence on shaping our current viewpoints and our kind of direction as you know, from a perceptive standpoint as a country. Remember in that 97 Masters, it was kind of amazing. He had a 10 or 11 shot lead overnight. And on his way out of the golf course, Frank Irwin, Fuzzy Zeller, who was probably the most popular guy on the tour because he was just an affable guy. He'd walk around whistling while he played. He always had a one-liner and a quip. Remember the unfortunate comment that kind of tore Fuzzy Zeller down that point on? On his way out, he said, hey, because they asked him, what are your perceptions, about Tiger Woods? And he said, hey, that little boy is doing everything it takes to win. Uh-huh. He's just playing phenomenal. So, you know what you do? You come back tomorrow, you play as best you can, you wish him good luck, and remind him that, hey, by the way, next year at the Champions Dinner, don't serve fried chicken, okay? And, it was just a off-the-collar kind of quip. But I think for the first time, that humor wasn't funny anymore. I think people kind of looked at that, and I don't think Tiger was being perceived as some kind of minority who was succeeding. He was just this titan of sensation. And that quip by Fuzzy Zeller, did not shape the future per se, but I think it really called a lot of people's attention to, this kind of, underlying racial humor is just not funny anymore, and it's not appropriate.
No, I think you're spot on, and I had totally forgot about that whole situation. And I remember it happening, and Fuzzy Zeller was one of those guys, like you said, everyone loved him. And boy, he was looked at a lot differently after that call as well. So, yeah, that's an amazing time, an amazing time that you bring that up, because, so many people expected Tiger to carry this torch. Well, he carried it whether he wanted to or not, but it was because of his game. And again, you can make an argument. I would love to know what the PGA would look like today if Tiger Woods had never entered the fray in 1996, because would it still be that campy, Augusta feel? We're not going to put the scores at the bottom of the screen because that's the way it is. Uptight, can't spit on the green, can't scream at your favorite golfers on the golf course type of sport, or as Tiger Woods just absolutely, totally annihilated that and revolutionized the sport we all know and love.
Yeah, there's so many aspects to the Tiger Woods story. And I think, Dr. Josh's comment and some of your reflections brings us to the pertinent question here. At 47 years old, obviously physically extremely damaged, what's next for Tiger Woods? What does he do now, Tony?
I don't know. And, I think a lot of people obviously would love to see him play in the senior tour. I don't know if that will ever happen. And obviously he can join that tour at the age of 50. And by the way, kudos to Phil Mickelson, whether you like Phil or not. Oh. Amazing what he did at 65 on the last day this past week, because I don't think anyone thought Phil was actually going to be in the mix. But yeah, I think it's interesting because Tiger, if you go to tigerwoods.com, man, I mean, he's into so many different things. He has so many different charities. He's a philanthropist. He's got, of course, his schools that he helps out. Tiger Woods is much bigger than a golfer. And I would venture to guess to say, without the LIV Golf, I don't think we would have seen Tiger this past week. So if we're going to find silver linings, I want to thank LIV Golf for coming to existence, because Tiger Woods kind of felt like, hey, listen, us PGA guys have to continue to play. And they have. But I mean, I think Tiger could hang it up and not play again. But he also realizes the sport will always need him, whether he's a player or an ambassador.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Phil Mickelson, because we're talking about I think the word that keeps coming up here are correlations. This was his greatest rival throughout his entire career. And to see Tiger where he is now, limping off the course and just a shadow of what he once was, and to see Phil Mickelson, who, of course, Tiger outperformed and was you know, kind of the, unfortunately for Phil, became kind of the Black Bart against the shining hero Tiger Woods. But to see Phil thrive like this at the age of 52, added to Tiger's angst, I'm sure, of just watching him win the PGA and claim a major, the oldest man to ever do it 2 years ago. You know, it's just human nature. Tiger has to be thinking, you know, I'm better than Phil. This should be me at this point. I could still be at my prime. It's just another kind of dagger in the psyche of Tiger Woods, I think, that Phil is thriving. And Phil has had tons of adversity in the last couple of years, a lot of controversy with an unfortunate civil suit involving some of Phil's investment habits, we'll call that, involving some of his gambling investments and different things, and people suing him for alleged millions of dollars that he owes to them. And also the decision to go to the LIV Tour, which was strictly financial. But, you know, again, Tony, it's defensible for the guys who chose to do it, because I've made the point to several people this week that, you know, you have to realize golfers pack up and go off to tournaments with all of their expenses that they have to incur, particularly if you travel globally. And you're not guaranteed anything on these tours unless you make the cut and finish, you know, at a high level, where the LIV Tour is paying these guys up front and rewarding them like other athletes with contracts that are so lucrative that, you know, anybody who criticizes the decision to go that route because it's not, quote, good for golf, I think is a little bit of a hypocrite. Because, you know, if I was faced with that choice of not having to play as many tournaments, there are only 54 hole events, they pay so much more money, and I'm making tons of money just for showing up. People that are criticizing that, particularly sports writers, I think they would jump at a chance to do that.
There's no doubt. And then we have to get going here. But I would venture to guess, and I don't know this for sure, but Phil, remember when Phil was 33, 34, he hadn't won a major yet. And we were all like, when's Phil going to, you know, that smirky little left-handed little look, and that, does he have the firepower, the stamina, the motivation? Does he have that killer instinct to actually win a golf tournament? Well, then all of a sudden this Tiger Woods cat comes along and people are like, Phil's never going to win one. Guess what? Phil won six after Ty came on board and did it after the age of 34. So kudos to him. And a lot of, again, you know, competition breeds. And sometimes having that one guy, that guy to push you a little bit, can put you over the top. So great stuff from both those guys.
Yeah, this has been great. I'm glad we got a chance to discuss it, because I don't think anybody can make the argument that Tiger Woods has not been a historically significant figure at this era in time, not just from an athletic and golf standpoint, but just from a societal impact of changing a lot of perceptions and doing things that are seemingly incomprehensible, both on the great side and on the self-destructive side. He is truly an American story, and I hope people enjoyed our discussion today.
Kiefer and Curry, be back at you next week. Make sure you check out the TKR app. But like the 100,000 folks who've already downloaded the app, you can hear this show at least 5 times a week on the TKR app on Tony Curry Radio through Android, and of course on the Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network, which is taking off. And also check out Kip's other show called Need to Know, which also runs 5 days a week on TKR and of course on our podcast network. Kiefer, great show, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, Tony, take care of yourself.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.